Good afternoon. It's an honor to be here. My colleagues and I have used the term disease promotion to describe individual or organizational activities that encourage unhealthy behaviors or lifestyles or that contribute to unhealthy environments. And the first premise of my talk is that counteracting unhealthy policies and influences is just as important, perhaps more important, than promoting healthier ones. And the second premise is that corporate practices are an important social determinant of health. But before starting, I did want to disclose an interest, and that is that I had the privilege last week of speaking at the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations on this topic. And I learned something from them that I want to try and introduce at this session, but also at the APHA, where I've long been concerned how much time we spend sitting in our butts being passive when the goal is to become something else. And so what folks do at Occupy Wall Street is when one of us says something you like, you go like this. And when one of us says something that upsets you or makes you mad or that you disagree with, you go like this. And so you can think of it as a physical activity break. You can think of it as political participation. You can think of it as sort of checking in with your colleagues. So hope to see some. So why look at corporate practices as a social determinant of health? The World Health Organization says, as I'm sure most of you know, social determinants of health are the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age, including the health system. These circumstances are shaped by the distribution of money, power, and resources at global, national, and local levels, which are themselves influenced by policy choices. The social determinants of health, says WHO, are mostly responsible for health inequities. By this definition, corporate practices clearly fall within the scope of social determinants of health. And they're at this kind of intermediate level, a little distant from the immediate, I hesitate to use the word proximate in Nancy's presence, the immediate influences of health behavior, but a little more accessible than those deep structures and hierarchies. And so I think they make a particularly amenable target for public health intervention. And I think folks in public health have, in our understandable focus on individuals and community and government, have allowed corporations to remain invisible. So the goal of this talk is to make them a little more visible. And if we look at these mortality statistics, we can see these six industries, and much of my work over the last 5 or 6 years has focused on these, and they're really at the heart of the global consumer economy, are associated, the products they make are associated with about 1.1 million of the 2.5 million deaths in the United States each year. And so looking at the practices and products of these industries provides a significant opportunity for improving population health. And of course, many other industries play an important role. And the way I think about it is the products and practices of these industries, and again, these six are an example of more, are the pathways and mechanisms by which many of both the patterns of health and disease and the inequalities in health and disease are produced in this country. And by the way, I'd be happy to send these slides to people if you don't want to take notes. And again, with my colleagues, we've defined two sets of the behaviors of corporations, because really what we're trying to do is expand the paradigm from public health to simply changing individual behavior to changing corporate behavior. And one set of behaviors are their business practices designed to maximize profit, increase market share, and so on. And those include how they design their products, how they advertise and market them, the distribution of retail outlets, and the prices they choose to offer. And then we also need to look at their political practices, the lobbying and revolving door and campaign contributions and the sponsored research. And by understanding how businesses engage in behaviors that create patterns of illness, we can find opportunities for intervention, both in the short, middle, and long run. I think there are a few reasons why this is a timely topic. First, over the last few decades, corporate influence has been growing. And if you look at some of the numbers in the pink box, you can see the magnitude of that growth. I think also that if you look at the main alternatives being considered in this country for addressing the very serious health problems we're facing, clinical and genomic medicine on the one hand, lifestyle change on the other, neither of those has the potential to address the very major health problems that are now the causes of morbidity and mortality, chronic diseases, injuries, and accidents, both here in the United States and around the world. And I think the economic crisis that we've been facing, certainly since 2007-2008, provides an opportunity for discussing the role of corporations in well-being. And on the most more immediate level, I think if we're going to realize the benefits of whatever level of healthcare reform we're going to address, we need to fix some other things at the same time. We need to fix food. We need to fix pharmaceuticals. Or else we're simply going to continue flooding our healthcare system with people with chronic illnesses. So these are the business practices. A good example is supersizing, which ensures that products associated with obesity and diabetes are made available in higher doses to more people. A second example, this is a direct-to-consumer advertisement for Abilify, targeting it to Latino audiences. A recent report by the CDC found that the rate of antidepressant use in the United States among all ages increased nearly 400% between the early 1990s and the mid-2000s. 400%, at least in part as a result of direct-to-consumer advertising and other marketing practices, also direct-to-physician marketing, of course. SUVs are another example of the design of a product that was meant to maximize profits, even if it led to increased deaths from motor vehicle accidents, both to drivers, passengers, and pedestrians, and to increased pollution. One observer has estimated that SUVs were associated with about 3,000 excess deaths each year in the United States alone in the 1990s. The profit margin on SUVs is about 10 to 12 times higher than on conventional sedans. Advertising, a critical strategy that a business practice, has been associated with for example, increased drinking. Each additional ad a young person saw above the monthly average of 23 led to drinking 1% more. For each additional dollar per capita spent in alcohol advertising in a local market, young people drank 3% more. And this contradicts the usual industry argument that advertising is simply meant to switch brands from one brand to another. Some of the political practices that affect health are listed here. And corporations seek to achieve their business goals by these methods. And the political practices have become a prime obstacle to stronger public health policies here in the United States and around the world. And these act at the local, state, national level. So in New York, about a year ago, tax on sweetened beverages was defeated after Pepsi and the other big drinkers contributed about, spent about $10 million on lobbying in 6 months in one state alone, illustrating their power to influence the dialogue. To give one example, in the last 15 years or so, McDonald's has spent more than $12 million influencing the political process. And this makes it extraordinarily difficult for ordinary citizens, public health folks, or the 99% of the population who would benefit from a healthier food system from being effective in shaping policies. The photo on your right is one of my favorites. It shows John Roberts, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, giving a tour of the Supreme Court to the leadership of the Snack Food Association, one of the groups most active in lobbying against any stronger dietary guidelines or food regulations. When you and I visit the Supreme Court, I assume we're not given a tour by John Roberts, but when the Snack Food Association does, they are. So I think a key question that folks in public health need to talk about is kind of where does lifestyle come from? And I found it helpful to talk about the lifestylers as well as lifestyle, the people who manufacture lifestyles that make the unhealthy choices, as folks in the New York City Health Department say, making unhealthy choices easy choices instead of making the healthy choices the easier ones. The unhealthy choices, because of the activities of the food industry and the tobacco industry and the alcohol industry, are in many cases the default option. And these two posters, I believe this is from Oakland, I think illustrate the schizophrenic messages that our society gives. On the one hand, urging people to take individual responsibility for health, and on the other hand, urging us to consume the very products that undermine it. And the woman on top looks much more serious and like she's having less fun than the one on the bottom. So to, of course, public health folks have to present models. My formulation of this is that there are five different pathways by which corporate practices affect health. And these are the actual products they produce, but equally important, the way that industry gets inside our heads, the way they affect our wants, our needs, our desires, our fears. And that's a very important influence on health behavior. The physical environments that are shaped by the power of industry, their control over zoning, the location of retail outlets. Almost every school child in the United States lives within 10 minutes, goes to school within 10 minutes of a fast food outlet, because fast food outlets know that's a good place to locate their retail distributors. And there are studies associating obesity with the distance from a child's school. Corporations also affect social environments by influencing norms and social values. And industry has gotten very sophisticated in using social networks and their advertising to shape health norms. And finally, as we discussed before, corporations affect politics and the actual policies that govern their other practices. And so together, not only do these corporate practices influence the hierarchies and the structures that are such an important influence on health, but also the health behavior. And in my view, looking at health behavior and structures and hierarchies as two separate things and in competition misses the boat. And what we need to understand is how these things fit together and to develop a public health practice that is sophisticated enough to address all those dimensions of it. The corporate practices that I've described also contribute to inequities in health. And they do that by targeted advertising, by differential distribution of retail outlets, by designing products that appeal to particular disadvantaged groups, and by their pricing strategies. And this suggests that an important way to reduce inequalities in health is to develop policies that discourage racial, socioeconomic, or gender profiling by advertisers of unhealthy products. And that requires us to take on the current view of corporations by the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary in general, which is really expanding their protections of commercial speech and political speech, and at the same time reducing their liability for the costs that that speech induces. And they, to my mind, what we need to say is you can't have it both ways. If you get to say whatever you want, then you have to be accountable for the consequences of those speech. So I want to end by talking about, so what do we do about this? And these three images illustrate some ways that different folks are beginning to take on corporate practices. Stop Poisoning Youth Worldwide comes out of the Legacy campaign, the Truth campaign, of engaging young people in saying not only that smoking is bad for you, because any of us who are parents of young adults know that adults saying that is probably the best way to get kids to smoke, but rather to say, you know, they're playing us for chumps. The tobacco industry is trying to get us to do things that are against our interests so they can make a buck. The Capitol Hill, down the road from here a bit, this is the Million Mom March. And I think what was particularly salient about that was that the mothers of people harmed by gun violence together organized people from around the country to talk not only about laws, but also about changing our demands on the gun industry and their unregulated retail distribution of handguns and so on. And many people focus on the NRA, and they've been part of the problem, but another very important part has been the gun industry itself. And finally, the image in the bottom comes from a campaign by Corporate Accountability International, a group that I'm working with, to retire Ronald McDonald. And they argue that the business model of McDonald's is to appeal directly to children, to establish lifetime health habits, to circumvent their parents, and that this is really an immoral and unethical business model. And they've called on McDonald's to stop advertising to children, to retire McDonald's, to retire Ronald. Now, that sounds like a quixotic quest, and the executive of McDonald's, Jim Skinner, who, by the way, earns $10 million a year, rejected their call. But you should know that Corporate Accountability International was one of the first groups to call for the ending of Joe Camel. And so their hope is before long, Ronald will join Joe in the retirement home in the sky. Some of the characteristics of anti-corporate health campaigns. They have specific goals related to health. Some of them include people from a specific population, others are much more broad-based. But they have the potential to bring together the 99% to offer an alternative to the health future that the 1% is offering us. And I think they build on the experiences and practices of the health movements, particularly of the 60s that some of us, and 70s and 80s that some of us in this room are familiar with, but perhaps also the 1840s that the name of the sponsor of this session also alludes to. Another example is some of the counter-advertising campaigns. This just up on a billboard in Seattle trying to equate Burger King and their products with an epidemic of diabetes. The other by Center for Science and the Public Interest, looking at not only the alcohol consequences of Alco-Pops, a sweetened beverage with alcohol called by some people drinks on training wheels for drinkers. But this was calling attention to some other consequences of Alco-Pops. I want to end by suggesting a policy agenda. So there are a lot of groups doing work around the health implications of corporations. But for the most part, those groups are working separately. And to my mind, to begin to see these strands become a full-fledged social movement, we need to think about, well, what does a movement need? One thing a movement needs is an agenda. And here are my suggestions. You might have others and better ones, and maybe we can talk about this some a little later. So the first is that consumers ought to have the right to know the health consequence of any product we buy, and companies ought to have the duty to disclose what they know about the health consequences. And for the most part, right to know and duty to disclose laws in this country are pretty weak. Second, we ought to considerably strengthen the protections that children and other vulnerable populations enjoy against the targeting, marketing of unhealthy products. Many other Western countries have more advanced laws around this. Third, we need to make corporations liable for the health-related costs of the product they produce to return those externalized costs to them. We need to increase sanctions for the deliberate distortions of science that have played such an important role in tobacco in the previous decades and now in food and pharmacy. And most important, in some ways, we need to level the playing field. The reason I'm optimistic is I think we have some windows of opportunity. The Occupy Wall Street demonstrations, the emerging food justice movement, the debates, the arguments, the organizing around healthcare reform, and the emerging environmental movement around global warming. Together, these movements can create a practice taking on the health-damaging consequences of corporations. Thank you very much.